Storyworthy Media, the best in story-driven content.
Guys, you found it, and it's worthy. It's story-worthy. And I'm Bert Kreischer.
Welcome to the Story Worthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finn.
Welcome to Story Worthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finn. And we're coming to you from the Russian Tea Room in Manhattan.
Oh, that's an interesting
place. We're spending lot of money. Glass of water here, $48. For tap water.
I wouldn't doubt that, actually.
Yes. No, it's fantastic.
Well, we're here because our storyteller tonight, Bert Kreischer, he brings forth the story, The Machine.
The Machine. And, parentheses.
Well, I know for a fact it takes place in Russia.
Right. Parentheses, How I Got Involved with the Russian Mob. So there you go. It's like one of those songs that would have a title, but then the parentheses, like they just couldn't decide. There was so much information.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't decide what to call the song.
Well, I know this story, but it's kind of a famous story of Bert Kreischer's. You know, he's become quite a talent in the last couple of years. He's just everywhere. You guys have seen him for sure.
I've seen him outside my window, and it's really freaking me out.
It's terrifying, actually. So he brings forth a story, and it's a pretty famous story. If you guys haven't heard it, you're in for a real treat. Basically, it takes place in Russia.
Well, let's not give anything away.
No, I'm not going to give it away. I'm just going to say
spoilers.
That it is a tense situation in a country that is, you know, where there's tension in the air.
There's tension in the air. And that's what we're going to talk about. Where have we been where there's tension?
That's right. That's what I was getting at. And recently I was
house during Christmas parties, but, you know.
No, recently I was in Oman, and it was a little bit tense over there.
And the United Arab Emirates.
Yes, I was over in that entire region, and a little bit of tension in the air.
You were telling me that you're in the airport. Staying next to this couple,
yeah,
the non-Muslim, the only other non-Muslim people in the whole airport, and they were who again?
It was the Master Chef Dubai and his girlfriend, or maybe wife, who was a British woman, and they were loud and obnoxious and so crazy because they had took our passports and we couldn't get them back and we had to wait for like an hour, and it was just a lot of tension in the air.
Yeah.
We didn't do anything wrong.
I like how hard for you as an American to get into the United Arab Emirates. Like, what are you going to do? Start proselytizing? You're going to start giving out, you know.
Was standing back trying to be kind of cool. You know, like I put a scarf over my head, hide all my hair.
Right, you're like, I'm down with the program. I get it.
For 2 weeks, I hid my blonde hair because, boy, oh boy, I stood out.
You
like
could have just stopped dying it. Oh, see, why am I so mean?
Oh, that's pretty funny. You know, I was thinking about that, actually. Mm-hmm. I've been dyeing my hair for 35 years.
You have no idea what color your hair actually is.
I shit you not. Isn't that absolutely unbelievable?
No, because every woman I know has been dyeing her hair ever since she was in her early 20s.
It's just so strange. It's such a strange
thing.
And
like I have a friend who was like, you know what? I'm going to see how it. I'm going to let it go natural for a while. 1/2 inch of pure gray coming out of the scalp. Go! No!
Well, it does look horrible. And it does look horrible. And for that matter, I paint my face. You know what I mean? This is makeup. This isn't like my eyes didn't wake up like this. Do you know what I mean?
Right. No, so, your eyes woke up very small because of all the weed.
That's true.
Yeah.
Anyway,
you're like, hey, I'm not going to make waves. It's your country.
And I'm trying to be really cool. And these guys, whatever. The point is, we finally get on the plane. My friend and I and this other couple were the only ones non-Muslim on the entire aircraft. And, you know, it was Oman Air. And we're flying from Salalah, which is way down by Yemen.
Oh, sure, Salal. I've got a place down there.
I mean, this is like,
I got a cabin there for
Arab as you're going to get. I mean, this is desert. This is camels. This is the whole thing. Not a lot of people.
Right.
By the way, Oman is a country. They have, in Oman, they have 100 Christian churches, 12 Hindu temples, and 6,000 mosques.
I'm surprised they haven't that many Christian churches.
But you can be any religion you want to be.
What's funny is, like, the only guy I ever knew who was from Iraq was Jewish.
Oh, interesting.
And it's like, you know, obviously he left because that was not a good
point
place
is,
to be Jewish. But You know, it's like we think of it as very monolithic, and it's a vast majority. But there are Christians, there are Hindus, there are other people living there, and they were born there.
There are, but they want to keep it on the LD, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Or the DL, whichever way you
want to
look at it.
The LD, yes. What they want to do is they want to take a lot of bright lights,
listen,
and like a bright, you know, sun bright. Remember when you were a kid and you
Did we already establish that I'm 50? Did we establish that?
We've been establishing that for a long time. You've been saying you're 50 for a long time to blunt the fact that you're actually about to turn 50 for real.
Right now, January 11th is the date this show drops. I turned 50 4 days ago on the 7th.
The 7th?
So it's all different. I have a whole different outlook.
So now you're going to say you're...
fuck all yins and fuck all yins. You know what I mean?
You went right back to Pittsburgh with the yins. I've had the fuck you all since I was 16.
Because you've always been 50.
I've caught up with my own age.
When you were 12 years old.
I just don't give a shit about people's opinion.
I know.
Because they're idiots. Well, even if they're not idiots, they're idiots.
I just want to say one more thing about Oman Air, and then we're going to get right to Bert Kreischer.
How was the pork on Oman Air? I hear their pork chops are fantastic.
The safety video, of course, is, you know, right in front of you on the screen. And the women, everybody in the safety video is Muslim, you know.
Is in a full burqa?
Some are in habibs and some are in a full burqa.
Habib is the headscarf.
Right. And then there's something else. I can't remember right now. But the point is, the video, it's very – so, you know, she's putting the oxygen mask on over the headscarf. Do you know what I mean? So it's very – and then the Quran is there. So while we're in the air, you can either read the Quran, which is coming up right in front of you, whether you like it or not, or you can watch the videos that you can watch on Oman Air are all like Bible stories, but they're the Quran stories. So it was very entertaining.
And no
alcohol. Don't even think about it. No alcohol.
I'm just thinking what you usually have to watch on the air and, like, you know, rejected sitcom pilots and, like, you know, endless episodes of How I Met Your Mother, which I didn't mind until I saw every episode 1,000 times.
Yeah.
And so it's like, ew, Quran stories. That sounds like that might perk things up a little bit.
Learn something around here.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, you
I
guys.
I like when they show, like, just one time they were showing the movie Independence Day on a flight I was watching. This is back when you couldn't choose your own. And it's like the laser beam comes down and it hits the top of the Empire State Building and starts going and destroying it. And halfway through, it freezes because the pilot makes an announcement. So they're... where, if you look on your left, you see the Grand Canyon. We'll be there in about 20 minutes. Unfreeze, destroy the second half of the Empire State Building. I'm like, this doesn't really have the impact that it should.
Did I ever tell you when I was a flight attendant and I would work the red eyes that sometimes we would just say, ladies and gentlemen, unfortunately, the VCR machine is broken today and we will not be able to show our movie this evening. You know, and we wouldn't show the movie.
You would just lie to them.
Yeah, we would lie. We would also never serve caffeinated coffee. We would serve all decaf.
Oh.
Because we didn't want to deal with you people, and we wanted to be in the back with the curtain closed, sitting on a meal cart. We used to sit on meal carts and smoke. You could smoke on the plane. Smoke cigarettes and you know what we did?
The VCR and the smoking. You really sound about 80, not 50
right
now.
We would either roll dice, like literally gamble. We're rolling dice or pass pigs. Did you ever see those pigs?
No.
It's a dice game with pigs instead of dice.
I think people want to know what were their sex orgies with the pilots during the flights.
There was one time I wore a pilot's hat. I do remember that night. Specific.
Was that the only thing you were wearing?
Yes, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
So it was.
But not on the plane. This is afterwards at the Ramada in God knows where, Davenport.
Syracuse.
What else are you going to – Syracuse. Oh, God, yeah. You know what? I would sleep with a pilot if it was sports spend the night in Syracuse.
Nothing else to do, right?
Yeah.
All right, you guys, listen. Before we bring Bert Kreischer on, I did want to mention that if you'd like to support the Story Worthy podcast, I have a great idea.
Is it to buy your book?
Why not buy my book? Pit to LAX, My Story-Worthy Life.
Horn the book.
No, listen, it makes a great, I was going to say Christmas gift, but Christmas is past.
It makes a great Easter gift.
No, it makes a great gift for me on my birthday. I'm going to milk this birthday for 3 weeks.
First of all, you're kidding yourself. You're going to milk the birthday for 3 years. You've been milking it for 3 years leading up to it. You're going to at least do 3 years after.
Here's what else you can do, you guys. Head on over.
Start telling Pimpy you're 60 about sometime in March.
You can head on over to storyworthypodcast.com and why not follow us on Instagram and on Twitter at Storyworthy. It's
yes,
just
and tell
that
your friends.
Simple.
We can't emphasize enough. Just tell your friends that we exist.
It doesn't cost anything to share the word. It doesn't cost them anything.
You don't even have to actually like us. You can lie.
It's unbelievable.
Tell people you hate us and that we're so hateable that you have to listen. That's fine.
Yeah,
we don't care.
We
are numbers. Numbers, people.
We don't care where they come from.
Yeah.
They hate us. They love us. We just want them.
Yeah. Donald Trump. People hate Donald Trump. You know why? He's got big numbers because people follow him ironically.
Listen, we got to get to Bert Kreischer. Don't even bring that up. All right, you guys, wherever you are, stick around because Bert Kreischer is on his way here. Next time on Storyworthy, we have author Vicki Abelson.
And I'll be talking about the night my mentalist husband went mental.
That's next time on Storyworthy.
Hi, this is Bob Scratch Goldfarb, a.k.a. Bobcat Goldthwait, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
And we're back. We've left the Russian tea room. We're now at the Russian consulate. We're asking for asylum, and it doesn't look good.
It does not look good. Did I ever tell you I have a niece who is from Russia? My sister adopted her.
She was adopted from Russia. That's true.
Yeah, she was... She hit the lottery. Is
her name
did.
Nikita? Did she turn into
exactly
an assassin?
Right. And then it's Svetlana.
She's a sexy assassin?
That's exactly right.
Oh, okay. Fantastic.
All right, you guys. He's here right now. Bert Kreischer. He is a stand-up comedian, and he performs to sell-out crowds across the country. And see, Hannes, that sounds like, you know, plays clubs and colleges across
all the country. All over the country.
But this is true.
No, it's a horseshit bio.
He is on
fire. No, it's
fire.
All lies, apparently.
Bert is also the host of the Travel Channel's Trip Flip and previously hosted Hurt Bert and Bert the Conqueror, which I believe is coming back. We'll find out. He's also a regular on the Joe Rogan Experience. And, you know, when they do podcasts over there, the Joe Rogan Experience, the experience is a three-hour-long experience.
Well, aren't they all high?
Well, I don't know, but wow. I mean, they're really getting their money's worth is what they're doing.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
In volume is what it is.
You sound like a CIA operative in the 60s. Aren't they all smoking dope?
Yeah.
He's also a regular guest on the Rachel Ray Show, and he's appeared on Late Night with David Letterman and Jimmy Kimmel Live. He also has a one-hour special out called Comfortably Dumb. That's very clever. On Comedy Central, and he also, of course, has a book. Of course he has a book. Life of the Party, Stories of a Perpetual Man-Child. I can believe that. Follow him on Twitter, at Bert Kreischer, and also over at BertBertBert.com. Wherever you are, folks, put your hands together for Bert Kreischer.
Thank you. When I was 22, I got involved with the Russian mafia. Here's how it happened. I went to school at Florida State. I wasn't a very good student. I spent 6.5 years in college. At the end of that 6.5 years, just to put things in perspective, because this story will sound outrageous. At the end of that 6.5 years, Oliver Stone discovered me. Rolling Stone wrote an article about me, calling me the number one party animal in the country. Oliver Stone optioned the rights to my life to make a movie. I moved to New York within 6 months. Will Smith discovered me doing stand-up, and that's how I got into the business, technically. But this is all when I was 22. This is my 1995, maybe even a little earlier than that. I started taking a Russian class on accident. I thought it was Spanish. This is what a bad student I was. I sat through 3 classes before I realized, I don't think this is Spanish. So I got up to leave, and the teacher, who was hot as fuck, okay? He definitely worked out. No, I'm kidding. It was a girl. And she's still hot. She's still hot. She stopped me. She goes, listen, I need 14 kids to teach this class. You're the 14th. I need to teach this class in order to get my master's. So if you sit back down, you don't have to do anything all semester, and I'll give you a C. I was like, are you serious? She's like, dead serious. I was like, Strasvutia, bitches, I'm back. So I took Russian 1, 2, 3, and 4, never learned a fucking word. Think about what I just said. I took 2 years of a language, 4 semesters, never learned it. Russian 4 was taught in Russian. Do you have any idea what it's like to go to a class and sit there like an immigrant at the DMV all day? I just sat there literally nodding back and forth. At the end of Russian 4, same teacher pulls me aside. She goes, we're taking a trip to Russia. If you go, you'll get a minor. And I was like, wait, you know I can't read, speak, write, or understand the language. She's like, I'm fucking well aware of that. By the way, I don't know if I'm impressing this enough upon you. I was taking tests in a language that I was unfamiliar with their alphabet, okay? Do you know the pressure when you have to make up hieroglyphics every day? Literally, like, star, hashtag, shoe. Like, I tell her, fuck it, I'm going. Let's go to Russia. Let's fuck some minors. So, anyway, we go to Russia in 1995. I don't assume that anyone knows the history of Russia. But in 1995, the wall had fallen, and they were set up for capitalism. However, the only people that have been running capitalism was the mafia. So the people that took over Russia in up in 1995 was the Russian mob. They ran everything. They ran every aspect of that country practically. And our trip, as a matter of fact, we paid off the mafia. They told us this the very first night. Our head teacher pulled us out in front of us. All of us said, "We have paid off the mob to keep us safe. In exchange for our money, which we smuggled into the country through our teachers, they gave us two young gangsters. The word for that in Russian is banditi. They go, these banditi are going to live with you. They're going to walk you to class. They're going to walk you back from class. They're going to take you on field trips, walk you back from field trips. Do not speak to them. They're in the mob. Do not look at them. Do not engage them. Do not interact with them." I was like, they're going to be my best fucking friends. So the first night, I grab a bottle of vodka and a six-pack of Baltica, which is our local beer in St. Petersburg, and I plan a sentence. I was going to say, all day, I worked on the sentence all day. I was going to say, "Strasvutsya, menya savut Bert, ochim briatna, ya rabotayu koshka," which means, "Hello, my name's Bert. It's very nice to meet you. I work pussy." Kind of. It really means I work with cats. So that's the best I could do. I didn't know the language. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, because the second I'm face-to-face, I knock on the door. The second I'm face-to-face with a real Russian gangster. Mind you, there's no precedent for this. No one's ever seen this with the wife beater, with the tattoos, with the track pants and the cigarette. And he just stares at me in his door, opens the door, looks at me and just stares at me and just goes, "Shto?" I fucking panicked. I was a frat boy from Florida State. I was wearing a fanny pack. All I said to him, everything I planned on saying flooded out of my head, and all I said to him in his doorway in Russian was, "I am the machine." And he started laughing. He goes, "What the fuck did you just say?" And I just, because there's no slang. You got to remember, up until this point, Soviet, communist Russia, there's no such thing as slang. There is one word for everything. That is my car. That's not my ride. That's not my whip. That's not my hoopty. That's not my rig. That is my car. That is a car. My name is Igor. That is my car. So when a man just stands in his thing with no irony and just goes, "I am the machine," he took it literally. He goes, "What did you say?" I was like, "I'm the machine." He brings me into a room full of 9 Russian gangsters and says, "Stop, everyone, tell them what you just said." And I was like, "I'm the machine." Now they're all looking at me like, "Fuck it, he's the machine." They have no, I drink with them all night long, and all I knew how to say in Russian was, "I'm the machine, and I fuck cats." So we did everything together. Igor, you got to remember, these guys ran the trip. They ran the entire trip. So we'd go out to the Hermitage to go take a tour. Igor, my guy I met in the doorway, would go, "Not the machine. The machine stays and drinks with us." And no one could say a fucking word. He'd walk into my class, in the middle of my class, open the door and just go, "Machine, пойдем." That means, "Machine, let's go." And I just walk out of class like, "See you later, suckers." This was my entire trip. And then one day we take a trip to Moscow. And I said to Igor, "This is going to be fun. It's an overnight train trip. We'll drink all night. Have a blast." He's like, "I can't go." I said, "Why not?" And he said, "Different mafia runs train, different mafia runs Moscow." I said, "Well, what's that mean for me?" He goes, "Don't worry, I talked to Banditi. They'll take care of you." Sure enough, we get to the train station, and he introduces me to my two new gangsters, Igor and Igor. And he says to me, he goes, "Guys, this is the machine. If you give the machine vodka, you'll have a great time." And the bigger of the two Igors looks like a kid on Christmas. He's like, "Oh, I can't wait to play with the machine." He grabs me, and he goes, "The machine doesn't sit in coach with my class." He goes, "The machine sits in first class." Sure enough, he walks me to first class. It is pimped out with booze, food, and here's the real gangster part. Everyone that works on the train, as soon as the train takes off out of the station, everyone that works on the train comes in to pay their respects and do a shot. The fucking conductor walked in, rips off the stars and stripes to his shirt, placed him in my lap, and goes, "This is a present for the machine. It would be an honor to do a shot of vodka with the machine." I'm 22 years old thinking, "Huh, these machine stories might have gotten out of control. What the fuck do they think I do?" We drink all the booze in an hour. Big Igor stands up. He goes, "Machine, we go to the bar cart to get more vodka." I'm like, "Fuck it. I'm in the mob. I'll do whatever the fuck I want." We roll into the bar cart like a big dick in a locker room. Just smack. Not that I've been that guy, but I've seen it. And Igor says to me as we walk in Russian, he says, in Russian, he goes, "Machine, go behind the bar and grab bread. Chleb is bread." And I understood him. For the first time in 5 semesters, 2 years, I'm learning the language. I'm learning it my way, not through flashcards and textbooks, but by joining the mafia. I'm behind the bar like, "Igor, I know what you said." He's like, "Good for you, machine. Can the machine find cheese?" And I'm like, "Sir, cheese, I got it. Give me another one." He's like, "Grab vodka." I was like, "I already know that one. Give me another one." And he's like, "Grab the money." I'm like, "Huh?" He goes, "Grab the fucking money." And I realized at that instant, we're robbing the bar cart. And I'm the one doing it, hooked on phonics style. I look at the bartender. He's looking off in the – he's just looking at the wall, not making eye contact with me. I grab the money, walk out. 2 of my classmates see me. They're like, "You're in so much fucking trouble." We go back to our first class cabin. Like, everything's normal. start drinking again. Within 5 minutes, the head chaperone of this train trip, not the whole trip, just this train trip. She was an English teacher who did not speak Russian. She catches wind of what I did, comes to our first class cabin, swings the door open, and loses her shit in kind of the only way you can imagine a liberal arts teacher that has never, that lived in a microcosm of Florida State. Just, this shit is fucking over. You are done. Stand up, mister. Stand up. And Big Igor looks at me, smiles, takes a big sip of vodka, spits it in her eyes, and goes, "No one talks to the machine like that." Shuts the door in her face, looks at me, and goes, "Fuck that bitch. This is Russia. Don't worry, machine. When it gets dark, we have good time." I'm like, "What the fuck are we doing when it gets dark?" Reaches into his pocket, pulls out a ring of keys, and he goes, "We're robbing the whole fucking train." Now, before we go further, I just want to say, I don't cheat on my wife, okay? I don't cheat on my wife because one morning, we had a beautiful morning. It was early in our marriage. And I thought, I don't ever want to fuck this up. So I had a conversation with myself. I said to myself, if I ever get put into a situation where it looks like things could get out of control, and it happens. On the road, it happens. What I'll do is I'll cock block myself. I'll just go, "I don't cheat on my wife," loud as shit. And some woman will stand in between us. That woman will feel embarrassed. It'll be a scene. But what matters to me most is that I don't cheat on my wife because I already had that conversation. I know what I want out of life. Here's the problem. I never had that conversation about robbing trains. So when proposed the offer to rob a train, I swear to God, to this day, I think I'm the guy that would say, "No thanks, not me. I'm going to go back and work on my verbs." But apparently, in the situation, I'm the guy that's like, "Fuck it, let's start with my class." So we robbed them first. We robbed my whole class while they slept, if that makes it any better. If it makes it any better, we robbed me too, because my bag was with them. And then we robbed the rest of the train. We robbed the entire train, the whole front to back, all night. Drank all night, robbed all night, and then ended up back in our first class cabin and drank until 6 in the morning. 6 in the morning, pulled into Moscow, pissed drunk. Like, top five drunkest I've ever been without throwing up. Train stops, sun's up, blaring. Door opens, same teacher, not mad. Curiously not mad, smiling. Looks at me, smiles and says, "I want to be the one to tell you, they've alerted the police." And I look out and I see two cops standing on the platform taking a statement from my class. They're upset. They've been robbed. I get it. Apparently, they've never heard snitches get stitches. Big Igor is totally unfazed. He has a bottle of vodka in one hand, cigarette in the other, looks at the cop taking a statement and goes, "Don't worry. I fuck police in mouth for both of us." I'm like, please say that got lost in translation. I'll take separate counsel, please. He walks out of this train, walks up to the cop who's taking a statement. The guy is writing down in a little notepad what my class is saying. Igor walks up to him, grabs him by the arm, spins him around, and goes, "Fuck you. We," pointing to me, "we fuck you in the mouth. We fuck you in the ass." I'm like, stop with the fucking we shit. Now the cop is just staring at me, and I hear him bark out, "Пойдем, здесь, где?" Which I don't know what that means, but it doesn't sound like, "You're okay, stay there." It is a come to Jesus moment. I don't know if you've ever had one like this. I had one recently when the doctor felt a lump on my head and said, "That concerns me," where your heart drops and you realize, oh shit, this is real. All I thought as I walked to the cop who's standing in front of the class I just robbed, next to the gangster I robbed them with, all I thought was, honestly, my only thought was, this isn't how I planned on spending my second junior year. Like in the gulag. Like I planned on going to formals and socials. And now I screwed up. I'm walking to the cop who looks impatient. I get 5 steps from the cop who's like now like steaming. He takes 3 big ass steps, grabs me tight as fuck by the arm, spins me away from my class, away from Igor, pulls me right to his face, and he goes, "So, I understand you're the machine. Nice, tonight you party with us." I was like, wait, I'm not in trouble? Like dumbfounded. I've never had this feeling ever in my life. I'm not in trouble? And he gets so close to me, I can smell his morning cigarette, and he goes, "No, fuck that bitch. This is Russia."
Oh man, Bert.
I like answering questions
Walk me through robbing the train.
Are people pretending to be asleep?
No, everyone's sound asleep.
Okay.
It's I wrote about it in my book. I tell this, the story I tell on stage is a lot maybe shorter. I keep out, there's one fact that I kind of don't share on the stage presentation of it, but in my book I'm honest, because you write a book, you have a lawyer go through and vet it, mm-hmm. And I had to be 100% honest. There was a guy with us, a guy named John Bolshoi. I won't say his name because I don't
you
think
just
he
did.
Wants.
No, John
I
know, Bolshoi.
No, I just made that.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
John Bolshoi means
Big John in Russian.
Oh, I never heard that.
Yeah.
John Bolshoi Ballet.
Learn something every day.
The Big Ballet. So, yes. So
fuck the Big Ballet.
He was with me the majority of the time, the entire time. So in a weird way, I'm not as vulnerable in the story like I am with another guy who speaks really good Russian. So what happens is we rob the bar cart. We drink until the sun sets.
Okay, hang on. Wait. When you robbed the bar cart, actually opened up the cash register and
took cash register.
Bills out. Okay,
no
cash register. What did you do?
I literally went behind. I could almost show you at that bar, but like I went behind and I was so excited that I understood him. I was bending over. And I was grabbing bread, I was grabbing cheese, and as I was binding over, John's standing right behind me, and when he said, grab the money, I looked at John, and I was like, what did he just say?
Yeah, you had to register.
And I was like, and then I remember looking at the bartender, and the bartender was staring at the wall, like hands in his pocket, like he didn't see anything, like just like, well, whatever's going on.
He didn't want to see
it. He didn't want to see it. And I looked, and what we took was whatever money, they didn't have cash registers, they just had like an open, like imagine if you took the guts out of a cash register.
Yeah. Like
and
a
it was
tray.
That. Yeah, yeah, tray. Because it's also a different currency. So a lot of coins. And I just took that money and I took the tips. And then we walked out.
Okay, so then you party all night in the cab or in the room.
In the room.
And then you get up and you say, that's when you're going to rob your classmates.
Пойдем is like the Russian saying of let's go.
And so
he's just said to us, пойдем.
Basically has like a backpack or a rucksack.
No. Everyone pretty much has like what you'd... like a backpacking backpack, not like just a rucksack, but like some people had straight up luggage.
Okay. Yeah. So you would open it up.
So what would happen is we'd go through. He would crack the door. Little Igor would crawl in. All the bags were on the floor.
Was Igor small?
There's two Igors, a big one and a little one.
Okay.
Little Igor would crawl in and he'd get in the room and he'd start pulling out bags. And then me and John's job and Big Igor would kind of stand guard, but he'd go through. Our job was to go through the bags and take out shit. So we didn't steal we didn't steal passports. We didn't steal money.
So you're
taking,
what are you taking?
Cameras, pocket knives.
Walkmans.
A boombox. Like, I know we had a boombox. We listened to music the rest of the night.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, but pretty much an innocuous shit. And in another part of it, and this is one of the things I love about a story is how good it can sound on stage, but then the truth of it, like dissecting it and telling someone. Well, there's also stuff I don't want to tell. That's why I'm a storyteller. I heighten moments and take it away. One of the major things that John and I were doing was kind of protecting the women in our class, because these guys could have done whatever the fuck they wanted to do, which is a really interesting part of the story as well. Is it, one girl woke up and Big Igor rushed in the room and spit vodka in her face.
That's so, I don't understand, that is like so rude. I mean, what do you do when you see somebody doing that in front of you?
We were also robbing them, so it wasn't out of character.
No, I know, but it just seems so violent to literally spit alcohol, not just like a funny spit take of water or like, haha, this is sort of funny or something.
Yeah, it's only one step off of punching you in the face.
Yeah, it's really tough. Yeah.
You're lucky he's only spitting vodka.
So what did she do when he did that? Did she like, whoa?
She came up, she started getting really upset. We went back to our first class cabin. She told the class they're robbing us. They came and looked at our room, and me and John were just guilty. We just didn't say a thing. And they were fucking terrified of these guys. You gotta remember, these are fucking gangsters.
Of course.
Here's how interesting this. I always find this the most interesting. So we go to Moscow and we hang out. I did not party with them in Moscow. I have said in the past that I did. We ended up partying with them with the two cops in St. Petersburg, and our Igor, our gangster, they talked to him, told him what happened, and he said, you guys can go fuck yourself. Bert shouldn't get in trouble. No one got hurt.
Yeah.
Bad things could have happened. As a matter of fact, on the ride home, he should party with those gangsters again if they want him to. And so our teachers came in the room, and they're like, listen, we need you to sit with those guys again on the ride home, because theoretically nothing happened.
Yeah.
Like, I know that you guys robbed everyone, but no one lost a money or a passport, and no one got hurt. So
you didn't take any cash,
bills. I'm sure we did. It was a long time ago. I'm sure we did.
Did you take anything off their bodies, like watches or anything? Because one time I was on a Eurorail train in Italy, and my girlfriend woke up, and this guy was taking her watch off.
Yeah, like, no, we didn't take.
Somebody came into our car.
It was bags. Yeah. Bags come out the bottom. Igor was in the room. Bags go back in. He puts them back, and then
systematic.
The next
yeah,
it was. They've done this before.
At some point, somebody is waking up, and then like in college, when your roommate's having sex, and you pretend that you're not awake.
Right. Yeah.
That somebody's like, I'm like the bartender. My eyes are still closed. I'm still asleep.
Yeah.
I see nothing. That had to have happened several times during this.
Just one time. Just one
but that
time.
You know
one
of. I'm girl. Saying people were yeah. like, I'm not letting on for a second.
Other people could have woken up.
Awake.
You don't know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm sure other people could have woken
so
up.
So was everybody smoking back then? Like, were all these Russian mobsters? Because I know cigarette smoking is still so popular yeah. internationally. I can't believe. It seems like I was in Turkey recently. Everybody in Turkey smokes.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, and I'm sure Russia's the same.
But it was black market cigarettes. So you get Marlboros, but they weren't, like, clean. You could tell it was, like, shit. Tobacco.
Yeah.
It was a
yeah.
different Marlboro. And but yeah. we I was smoking as well.
I want to go back to what you said when you got there. Yeah. Because the only people who understood the concept of capitalism at all were the gangsters. So it's like if America suddenly went, you know, suddenly the only people who knew how to run the economy in America were the Sopranos.
Yeah.
That's what it is. It's like they're yeah. the only ones who even have a clue as to what's going on.
If so America said we're going to adopt faith into our country's constitution again, the Christian right would take over because yeah. they're already dialed in for that. The only people that knew how to run a business were the mob.
Yeah.
Everyone else, I mean, I talked to Igor a great deal, my Igor, the guy in St. Petersburg, I talked to him in great details about why he got into this business. And his answer was always, I didn't have any plans. Like, you know, I didn't plan. I didn't like... Like, communism fell when I was, like, in my 20s. I just fucking did what my friends were doing.
So he was, you were 22. How old was that, Igor?
I don't know. I'm guessing.
30, 40, 50.
No, probably no older than 32.
So close to your age, really.
Close to my age, yeah, yeah.
What did you look like then, Bert Kreischer?
Skinny. Actually, I was fat. I was fat in Russia, but now it's skinny to me, but I was fat in Russia.
Did you have a beard?
No beard.
Really?
I had purple hair.
You had purple hair. Why?
Yeah, because I dyed my hair blonde, white before that. And they told us before we went, Russia doesn't take kindly to homosexuals. So you need to dye your hair black and I said, or dark and yeah. fit in. And I was like, I'm not gay. And they're like, doesn't matter with that haircut.
Yeah.
They will pull you aside. They will beat you on the street.
Wow.
And I said, okay. So I dyed my hair black, but it was a cheap dye and it started washing out. So halfway through the trip, my hair was like, had like definite highlights of purple in it.
Yeah, I don't see how that didn't get you beaten up.
You know what's so funny is I kept saying that to going, I remember getting in the elevator. We had to take an elevator from our floor down to the lobby to walk over to our classes. And I remember in the elevator one time, I was like, my hair's purple now. I should have just gone blonde, stayed blonde, but now it's fucking purple.
Well, yeah, and also, I mean, that would give you some of the confidence when you were in that room originally with those guys to say, you know, like, I am the machine. And maybe that their hair, and they're looking at you like, he's fucking nuts.
Well, it's... So for anyone that speaks Russian, yeah. what I tried to say, and I still don't know that, because my Russian's not good. What I was trying to say is, I'm the man, which is Yamashinu. But I said Yamashina, which means ultimately I'm a female car. Like, yeah. So yeah. It's a ridiculous statement to make. Like, imagine if a guy just walked in this room and he like Borat and just right. was like, I am car. Like,
right.
And he just consisted, said it over and over again. Finally, and we were all drinking. You'd be like, fuck it. He's a car.
Exactly.
It's the car, everybody.
I put him on the show right
yeah.
away.
So,
yeah.
So,
and the whole thing with male and female, you know, nouns, like in English, we don't have that. And it messes you up, you know, terribly. Like the Spider-Man in German is just the spider. Why? Because spiders are female. So to have the word Spider-Man literally makes no sense.
Oh, wow.
Well, that's
German.
Interesting.
Good call.
Yeah, I got a lot of useless information.
You really do. So listen, are you friends with this banditi on Facebook?
No.
Do you think any of these guys know who you are?
That's interesting. You can find all these pictures from that trip on Facebook.
No kidding.
Yeah,
on your site.
This is the weird thing about...
Wait, on your site or your page?
No. I don't have any of them. I wasn't the kind of guy that was fucking taking pictures back then.
I don't know. Why would I know that?
No, because you lived a life. Like, when,
this
like
is back in the 90s.
This is in the 90s. We didn't have pictures in our pocket. You had to take a
had cameras. I mean, I remember backpacking
right.
through Europe.
But you didn't how many
people
pictures?
Didn't fucking take pictures of themselves every
okay.
five
right.
fucking
right.
seconds.
Okay.
Like, so, you damn kids today. Don't get
fair
me started.
Enough, fair enough.
So there's a girl, Kristen. I don't remember her last name. I think it's a Swarthen. You can find it on my Facebook page. I've seen her since. We're cool. I've seen a lot of these kids since.
Go ahead.
This is the interesting
so
thing about storytelling.
She was a girlfriend at that time?
No, just a friend.
She was just a classmate.
Just a classmate. I robbed
her. She
was
her. On that train?
Yeah, I robbed
you
her.
You robbed her. Sure.
I robbed her. A bunch of these guys all found me on Facebook and started coming to my shows, sit in the front row. And I start telling the story and they start nodding. I'm like, oh,
yeah,
shit.
I remember that night.
Yeah. And so in a weird way, you can't be a modern day Mark Twain. You can't just make shit up.
No.
People are going to fact check you.
Yeah.
And trust me, when the first time I had a classmate sit in my front row, I went, fuck, how much of this story is true? Because you don't remember.
Yeah.
It's 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Don't you love when people can help you piece things together?
People
it's so
says,
much fucking fun.
When people tell you stuff, like I'd always said I was wearing, a certain outfit.
Yeah.
Mike, I remember it vividly. I was wearing an Obermeyer ski shell.
Yeah.
With blue jeans and a fanny pack and Danner, like cloth Danner boots. I think cloth Merrell boots.
Merrells, yeah.
I remember this so vividly. And this guy DJ was like, hey, man, and that I don't know why you say that's what you're wearing. I don't know why I was saying it either. It's not important to the story. But he gave me a picture, and I'm in a collared shirt.
No way.
I'm in a white collared shirt. I wore a white collared shirt that night.
But to be fair, I wore an Obermeyer shell for much of the 90s.
I had that for that trip.
So probably that's
what
you're
thinking. Was probably my go-to thing. But you can find all the pictures of this trip. And it takes the steam out of the story a tad bit when you see the Igor I was friends with. Because obviously, it's like with all Russian guys. The vast majority of them are just mostly from communism, under malnourished dudes. And so they're all a little smaller.
Yeah.
You know, like there's very few of the guys that you see that are in MMA these days. But he's just like a meek, kind of cool guy.
Yeah, they're like Steve Buscemi. They're like, he will kill you because he's got nothing better to do. He's too hungry to stop himself from murdering you.
He was a fascinating guy. He's not on Facebook. All my friends from that class are on Facebook. I'm friends with a good deal of them. Some people, you know, still weren't happy.
So in a way, you were like the buffer, as it turned out. They were like, okay, we have a couple of guys in our class they like, they can be over there with them. And
nothing bad's going to happen to us.
Nothing bad in the context of Russia is going to happen. Oh, we're going to get robbed.
The people on the
train. We aren't going to get raped, murdered, or beaten.
The people on the train. Now, and I have to say this, but the guys that we lived with, that were on our floor, that took us to class, the sweetest guys in the world.
Yeah.
Never we stole a boat one time, our class did, but like, and they did some shady shit, but for the most part, by the end of this trip, and I'm being 100% honest, the entire class was in Igor's room, drinking, playing guitar, laughing, having a great time.
Yeah,
and,
remember that time you robbed us on a train?
And we were all cool.
What do you mean by you stole a boat? Because if you take a boat, you need to have somewhere to put that. Where'd you put it?
We stole a boat. It was Russian May Day, I want to say. It's like the big day. It's in May. I'm only saying, guessing
it's
in May.
Yeah, it's May 7th, I think.
Yeah. So the big thing in St. Petersburg is you go out on the Kiev River. So every morning I wake up, I go right to Igor's room because usually the party had just ended and I'd have to go to class and he could get me out of class.
How long was this trip, by the way?
3 months, two months.
Brilliant. That's a nice chunk of time.
Maybe less. I don't know. I backpacked through Europe for the rest of the summer for a month or 2 months. I don't know.
So
it was a whole summer. Left the day school left.
Yeah.
Came back right before school started.
Perfect.
We get up. My whole class is in the, like, our middle area. Like, there was two big long hallways and then a middle area by the elevators. They're all there in ponchos with, like, seasickness wristbands. I mean, they're, like, loaded. They're like, we're going on a boat today. It's a big day. Everyone goes on the Kiev River. So I go down to Igor's room. All his friends are in there. There's this dried fish that you can get on the streets there. It's just dried salted fish.
Yeah, yeah.
And you literally, the eyeballs are still in it. It just looks like they left it on the street for a week.
Yeah.
And they're all eating it. It's magic hangover remedy. I said, it is? Yeah. If you're hungover, eat one. So I sit down, start eating one. And then what happens is you get thirsty, so you drink a beer.
Shot of vodka.
Yeah, so everyone's drinking beers. That's why the hangover is going away. And I said, this is going to be fun. We're going out on the boat today. And Igor just looks at me very flatly and goes, no boat. I said, what? He goes, I have no boat. I have no fucking idea of boat. I said, well, my whole class is waiting for a boat trip. He goes, I have no fucking boat. Everyone says boat. I have fucking boat? Where do I get fucking boat from? And I'm like, I go, you should tell somebody. He goes, I'm not going to fucking say a word. We get there and no boat. Fuck it. And then all of a sudden, their teacher comes in. She's like, you ready for the boat trip? And Igor and all his buddies are like, let's go out to a boat. So we start walking with the whole class. We're cases of beer, some dried fish. We're walking. We were like two blocks off the river.
And there is no boat.
I know there's no fucking boat. So we're walking, and I'm thinking, when we get there, what are we going to fucking do? All of a sudden, one of Igor's buddies comes running out of a hallway. He's like, Igor, I have boat. And Igor's like, we've got the boat. And he goes, we've got the boat. My whole class is like, I'm like, we got the boat. So we get down to the dock, and I swear to God, there is the most perfect boat for a class trip. It is reminiscent. If you ever saw the movie Sid and Nancy, it looked like the boat that the Sex Pistols got arrested on when they went out in the ocean.
Yeah.
So we get on, it's got like a observation deck and an inside a little lower. And as we're loading stuff on, I'm sitting with Igor and his buddies loading the beer. My class is on, and the dock master comes down. And he's like, says something in Russian, like, I need papers for boat. And the guy just lifts his shirt up, shows the gun, and goes, these are fucking papers. And the guy goes, okay, have it back by 5.
Okay.
So we took the boat, and I told my teacher, I pulled my teacher. I said, one of Igor's friends has a gun. And she's like, what? I was like, I'm giving you a heads up. I just want you to know. Because I, not that I was like a snitch, but I was also like the go-between between
you were the buffer.
The teachers and the and
the
she
mob.
Said, she said, what do you mean? I said, one of that's how we had the boat, is he stole the boat. We stole the boat. We're all on a stolen boat. And he's got a gun. That's how we have a fucking boat. And she was like, and I was like, what do I do? And they were all like, go down and drink with them. So I went down. I drank with them. I remember the guy put the gun on the table. And Igor was telling him, put the fucking, like, put your gun away. And the guy was like, are they fucking children? Are they fucking children? They haven't seen gun. Are they fucking children? I just remember being like, this is how someone gets shot. Like,
yeah.
This is.
Yeah. This
and
is
we
the
just
game.
Sat and we drank. My teacher came down. One of my, my teacher was a cool, really cool fucking person. And she is, she also spoke flawless Russian. So that's a lot of times when I party, that's how we all communicated. Me,
so,
her, and John Bolshoi.
Let me ask you. You grew
Please.
Up in Florida, right?
Yeah.
And do you have brothers and sisters?
Two sisters.
And how are they? Older, younger?
Younger.
They must be so proud of you, right?
I don't know. I don't know.
Do they enjoy your comedy?
Did
they ever
sisters.
Come to your shows?
They don't
or
see him.
They
way
come
the
to my
world
shows.
Season.
They think it's cool. They've known me so like when I start a story, they're like, fuck. Like,
yeah.
Really?
No, I hear you. I mean, my family thinks this is called Story World.
Yeah.
And it's been on 5.5 years.
Yeah, they're both funnier than I am.
Do
so,
either? Oh, really?
Yeah, so in a weird way, like, when we sit at Thanksgiving, I'm the least funny person. I tried to get my youngest sister, Cotty, into stand-up.
Yeah.
She is the funniest fucking
human
being.
How do you say
being.
Her name?
Cotty.
How do you spell it?
K-O-T-T-I-E. You want to hear a very
cute.
Quick, hilarious Cotty story?
No, we
yeah,
don't.
Yeah, I
no.
do.
She gets a job at Fox.
Uh-huh.
First day, it's in
L.A.
In L.A. She works at Fox still. She she works in publicity or PR or something. I don't really, not really certain, but PR or something.
Yeah.
First day, her boss says to her, she gets like 5 or 6 emails like her very first day about screeners. So her boss is like, she's like, I don't, what do I do? And he goes, oh, okay. She's giving you a heads up. That's your job is to direct screeners to the people who are going to get them.
Oh, forget
so it's going to be a little bit of a nightmare. It's screener season. So I don't think you're ready for it. Do me a favor. Just write one email. And anyone that sends you an email, just forward it on to them and just cut and paste it to everyone and tell them to talk to Tim Jews. He works in the studio store. And she's like, what's his name? She's like, Tim Jews. She goes, how do I spell his last name? He's like the people. J-E-W-S.
this is not going to be good.
And so Cotty goes, okay. So she writes a fucking form letter, copies it, and then the next day, like 100 people email her, just sends it. Hey guys, if you have any questions, contact Tim Jews in the studio store. Tim Jews has all your answers. I can't help you, but Tim Jews can, or whatever. The next day, she shows up to work and she starts getting replies like, there's only one? Huh? Inappropriate. She reads her letter, spell check, changed Tim Jews to capital the Jew in the studio store.
Oh my God.
The Jew can help you. I can't. If you have any questions, talk to the Jew.
That poor girl. That is so funny.
Her first day at Fox.
Oh,
are
that's
either
fantastic.
Of your sisters, do they do any kind of extreme stuff like you're talking about?
Nothing.
Yeah, that's not what
they smoke pot, or I shouldn't say that, but
that's
yeah,
all right.
They just hang out.
And so, and how many children do you have
now? I have two.
Two.
And my daughters, I sell a shirt. If you want to get a shirt, it's my face in Russian propaganda art. It says, I am the machine. It's at my website, burtburtburt.com. But I sell a shirt. My daughters, I am on the road a lot, great deal between travel and stand up. Travel Channel and stand up. And so my daughters sleep in the shirt. They're very comfortable shirts.
Sure.
Really nice cotton. My wife did a good job. And one night, I'm putting them to bed. They're both wearing the machine shirts. And Georgia says, Daddy, did you rob a train?
Oh,
and I was like,
gosh.
Motherfuck. Now, listen, I'm proud of this story. I'm proud of the fuck-ups I've had in life.
Sure.
I like sharing the story. It's a good – it's maybe one of the top 5 stories that's ever happened to me
in my
life.
It's amazing, yeah.
I've got some really good ones I'll tell you off air. That I And so – but it's a great story. First time I ever felt regret – for life choices I've made when I was young. I mean, I feel a lot now that they're getting older. I start going like, why did I ever do cocaine? Like, why did I ever do drugs?
Yeah.
Why did I ever brag about drugs on stage? Why did I ever talk about
putting
a finger in my wife's ass? Like, the stuff I've talked about in these hour specials, I start going, my kids are going to see that. This is the moment where it started. And I went, motherfucker. And George is like, some kids at school said you robbed a train, but then like one of her friends said that bad guys made you do it. Like, can you? And I go, listen, it's,
how old was she at this time?
I'm gonna guess 9.
Okay.
I'm gonna guess.
So they're very well aware. I have an 8-year-old. I know they're very well aware.
Isla's 7. They were their beds hadn't been in bunk beds yet. I think they've been up there a year. I'm gonna say it was a little bit before that because I was probably the height of the machine touring, and I said my wife said I think you just should tell them the story. And so I sat them. They sat, it was bedtime. I poured a big glass of wine.
Yeah.
I sat at their little chair at their desk, their table, and by their bed. And I told them a story, a little abbreviated, cleaned up version, but I told them the story.
And do you think that they really saw you in that story, or they think this is like a fairy tale, crazy story?
I think, I don't know. They've gotten really into my stories. They love me telling them stories, like just the dumbest stories ever. Like then now they're like, tell us more stories about when you went to high school. Because, you know, I went to an all-boys Catholic high school, and that's so foreign to them.
Sure.
And tell us more stories of you getting in trouble at school.
Yeah.
And so, but as
isn't
I'm telling,
that fun? Because my daughter, if she asks me something personal, I feel like flattered, like, wow, you actually care.
Yeah.
Who knew?
It's funny that you telling them that story. In my head, I see a Disneyfied animated version of the machine. I'm the machine. Yuck, yuck, yuck. And it's like something.
Yeah.
Totally.
These wacky
it's
kind
a doll.
Of guys with like, you know, nobody's in danger. And
yeah,
it's hilarious.
When I got to the end, I get off the train and I'm scared. And by the way, I'm telling them parts of the story that they'd relate to, which is true, but maybe I wouldn't share on stage. I go, I'm scared. I'm really scared. I'm afraid I'm going to go to jail.
Yeah.
And Isla, my youngest, who's a really interesting kid, stares at me and goes, hold on, wait. I need to know before you tell any more. Do you get away? And I'm like,
aww,
you fucking idiot. I'm here.
Aww,
yeah, I get away.
So cute.
Yeah, look, you're here. You're alive. Yes, I get away. Like, what the fuck?
That is so cute.
Yeah, but they were blown away, and they were like, "That George goes, that might be the best story I've ever heard." I was like, "It's a good story, baby." And I go, but
your kids are going to be smarter and more clever and more aware, and they're going to be better rounded people because of who you are.
I think a little bit. I think they hang out with, like, you know, my friends are the funniest
people
in
the world. Right.
They
no,
literally are.
That. Yeah. Doug Stanhope and Joe Rogan and those guys. Yeah.
And Bill Burr comes over.
Yeah.
And
forget
No, we had dinner with Doug. We had Doug Stanhope came in and I did a podcast. And then Leanne comes out, my wife. We're sitting out by my man cave outside. Doug smoking. We're drinking vodka. And she said, Doug, do you want to stay for dinner? And he's like, yeah, I'd love to. Mind you, like, this is a bizarre reality that Doug Stanhope, one of the greatest comics that
in the world,
he's someone that we will talk about for the rest of our lives,
Is
now eating dinner. So Isla says to him, do you want to play Mustard Hands? This is a dinner, my two kids. He goes, what's Mustard Hands? It's a game we play. We take mustard, we put it under the table. You either squirt it in your hands or don't, and then you pass it to the next person under the table.
Yeah.
And they either squirt it in their hands or don't. You go around the table until it gets back to the first person who puts it up, and then you go around the table. Does Isla have mustard in her hands? And everyone guesses. Are you the kind of person who's so silly you're going to put mustard in your hands? Or are you like my wife who will never put mustard in their hands?
Yeah.
And it's just fun.
That's the cutest
thing. Game we play, me and the girls play. So Doug is now playing the game. So it gets, Doug, of course he has mustard in his fucking hands.
Of course, he has mustard in his pants.
And he's sitting next to Isla, and Isla's going, and the mustard bottle gets back to her, and she sees Doug rubbing her hands, and she goes, looks at Doug, and she goes, can I change mine? And he goes, what? She goes, can I change mine? And he goes, clearly you didn't put mustard in your hands. You want to put it in now. She goes, no, you don't know that. And he goes, Isla, you can't put mustard back in a bottle. She goes, maybe I can. And he goes, yeah, you're allowed to change yours, Isla. So she goes, okay. And then clearly squirts it in her hands and puts it back up.
So
we go, Isla. And Doug goes, and by the way, I you can curse around my kids. And Doug's like, yeah, she has fucking mustard in her hands. And Isla goes, you got it. So then we do that. And Doug says, how about I teach you guys how to do a spit take? And they're like, what's a spit take? He goes, you guys don't know what a spit take is? And they're like, no.
And he goes,
so you say the punchline. As soon as you say the punchline, everything in your mouth, you got to be taking a sip, and you spit it everywhere. And Isla and Georgia to this day will do spit takes and talk about Doug Stanhope.
That is so damn cute.
They'll be interesting kids.
I wish he would stop smoking at some point. I've never seen a comedian smoke so much.
Yeah, you can't stop. You can't stop. Well, no, you can't stop someone from doing what they want to do. People tell me, I wish you'd just stop drinking. And I go, yeah, but you're not me.
No, I know.
You know, like, I don't know. It brings me joy. I have a good time.
I get it. I guess I just that specifically, there's so many people did stop smoking, like, over the last 20 years in comedy, you know, in terms of going. Were you doing comedy when the rooms were full of smoke?
Yeah. I've been doing comedy 16 years.
Okay, so you know. And now.
Yeah, it used to be you'd go home and you smelled like you had been smoking
for
the rest
weeks.
Of your entire life.
I had a stand-up comedy hoodie that I'd wear in New York because it was the smoke one. And so I'd wear that to do stand-up. And then if I went out with my friends, but everyone smoked back then.
Everybody did.
I used to smoke some cigarettes, but I haven't smoked them
forever. So I guess that's just what I mean. It's just that he's one of those guys that it goes on. I don't know.
Yeah.
He's keeping the tradition alive. Well, for a while.
Exactly. That's my point.
Doug Stanhope
And he's a young man, too. He's only 53? 54?
He is a Viking battleship when it comes to fucking comedy. Yeah. He goes out in the water, and if it doesn't come back, he's cool with it.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. He's a Viking funeral man. I love that guy.
Seeing him live.
He's genius. His podcast,
too.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
And we were talking about podcasting earlier. It's one of the best podcasts out there.
Because what he
does is he just has his friends that live around him do it, mm-hmm. and they just do it. And then he does it on the road. It's got no rules. No, like, it's just real freeform Doug. And a lot of it's Doug. A lot of it's him driving story and content. And I love that.
You know, I took comedy class with Mark Lano and Doug's mom.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, Doug's mom was in the class.
She was so sweet.
So there was this, we had like some showcase, and there was Doug was in the show and his mom.
Yeah, she just sat on stage smoking with him.
Yeah.
Ironically.
It was hilarious.
Listen, before we play Shekin Storyworthy, I wanted to ask you, is Bert the Conqueror coming back?
Yes, it is. We just finished production. We just finished production like 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. I just got an email from the. I'm getting emails now because they're going through cuts, and they're sending me cuts.
You are on such a roll. I can't believe it. Go ahead.
No. And so we did this haunted house thing, and it's apparently the funniest thing I've ever done on television. This season's going to be pretty outrageous. And I say this in that if you don't like it, it's my fault. If you do like it, it's everyone's hard work. But I did a lot of things I refused to do that are typical single camera hosted reality shows.
Mm-hmm.
Like I refused to do reads. I refused to do anything that seemed like it came out of an office on an agenda or beat shot.
Wow.
So it's just me going out, having a really good time.
And the idea of the show, of course, is that you go across America to different amusement parks.
Different amusement parks, different thrill rides, different adventures. Like,
is there any ride you would not ride?
There's a couple that I've turned down just because I don't like spinny rides, rides that just spin you in circles, because it just makes me sick.
Me too.
I'm done for the day.
I like up and down. I don't like the spinny.
I like up and down. I've done some like the Vomitron, which is a ride in Orlando.
That's foul. What is that? What are you saying?
It's
the Vomitron.
A huge arm that is attached to like a fulcrum.
A fulcrum at the bottom.
Like a center point.
I see. Uh-huh.
And then it just spins, but the bucket. Spins
the
around.
Zipper. You're talking about the zipper.
I don't know what it's called.
Is
a
this
bunch
where you get
things.
Pressed up against the wall?
Nope.
By
no, that's the roundup.
It looks like this. It looks like describe this. It's
okay.
Attached to this.
So he's holding a selfie stick and it's spinning
just goes
around.
Like this.
Okay,
and it just goes up and down and spins.
And the seat will spin backwards.
Oh, the seat is spinning inside the spinning. So you're spinning inside of spinning.
We've made this so confusing. Yes.
So this
No, people. That I can visualize. Yeah. That I've seen.
Yeah.
And I've said, no fucking way am I getting anywhere near that.
I did that one. That was fun. I've done everything there is to do. Now I go out a lot. Not the only time I ride rides is I go out and open rides. Like mm-hmm. if there's a brand new ride, I'll go out and open it. And I'll ride rides that, like, I like a lot of what they're doing with wooden coasters is real kind of game changer-ish.
Yeah.
They're putting a lot of hybrid coasters, so you're getting wooden coasters that go upside down and do barrel turns.
It's really
amazing. And there's certain designers that I like their rides.
Isn't it funny that you've become, like, a savant on this? You know what you're talking about.
Right, there's a whole culture attached to it that most people aren't aware of certain designers, certain types, certain materials.
It's funny, man.
And it's like wine or coffee or something.
It's
you know it or
so.
You don't know it.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of body slides, like water slides, like the drop body slides. Doug Benson and I.
They are so fucking scary.
Oh, I did the world's tallest
one. The
ones
where you put your feet first and you get like an enema, yeah?
No, yeah, yeah.
You gotta squeeze your butt cheeks together so hard.
We went on the world's tallest one, and the guy who owns the world's tallest one, I said, is this guy like a wedgie factor? He's like, I'd love to see you there. In a Speedo. So I put on a Speedo and I got it, and it's like seven stories.
Bert,
I want to say it's seven. I want to say it's like, it's massive.
You buried the lead. How didn't you bring that story?
Oh, if I've. So many fucking.
Okay.
But like Doug Benson and I did a. Doug
okay,
Benson
so
and I
wait,
did a
you
podcast.
Get on a Speedo, you get on, what happens?
Oh, I drop and it is jacked up my ass. And the best part of all of it. And then this is.
You have to peel
this
it
is,
out.
This is a comics. I mean, this is for a comic.
Right.
You know, most people wouldn't like this.
Right.
But I get done. I know it's up my ass. Ugh. I stand up.
Ugh.
I show the camera. I turn around and there are three black women clearly just waiting for their kids, getting out of the sun. And as I turn around, they see it and they're perfectly in line of the camera right over my shoulder and they lose their fucking minds. They're like, oh, shit. And so perfect moment. Benson's a big fan of roller coasters. We and him did a podcast where we just talked about roller coasters for an hour.
That is terrific.
And it's what Travel Channel wanted initially when I first started the show. And then and I didn't have it. I was like, I don't know anything about coasters. Now I know more about coasters than the vast majority of people. I've been with designers that have new rides that aren't even out. I've met with guys that own parks and have asked me about rides.
But this season, Bert the Conqueror season 3, you're gonna concentrate on different things like a haunted house.
There's a haunted house. We do a couple like the Tough Mudder type races. The Rugged Warrior, Rugged Maniac. We do like big events. We do it's anything thrills, anything that gets your adrenaline pumping, we do.
Well, I am so excited for you. And you're so goddamn likable. So it's really exciting to meet somebody who's really succeeding and moving ahead, and you're likable, and so it's like a win-win, everybody wins.
Well, I think I've the same energy you have. I'm a very happy person.
Me too.
Like I like going to I went to Gelson's this morning and I like trying to make people smile.
Gelson's rocks.
Just seeing someone walking
by and
go,
it's a little expensive, but it's worth it.
It's a little expensive, just going like, "Hey, how you doing today?" And someone being like, caught off guard, like, okay.
Put your pants on.
Yeah, I'm a positive person.
Yeah, awesome. Hey, listen.
I have no idea what anyone's talking about.
Would you like to play some Shotgun Storyworthy?
I would love to.
That music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the Storyworthy Wheel of Truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
I landed on Dad. My dad's an old school dude. He does not like he doesn't dream. Like I called him up one time. I said I had a bad dream. He goes, "You still dream?" I go, "Yeah, I dream." He goes, "What are you dreaming about? Ponies and shit?" I go, "Yeah, sometimes." At my grandmother's funeral, I started crying. He said, "What the fuck are you crying for?" I said, "I'm upset. She's, you know, I loved her." And he said, "No, be a man. You got daughters. You got your wife. Be a man. You don't cry. If you want to cry, you do that privately." I said, "But Dad, I don't feel like that." And he said, no. Come on." Him and my uncle pulled me into a different room at the funeral parlor. Stood with me. I'm going to cry talking about this. I'm going to cry right now. And they were like, "If you need to cry, cry with us." It was like a real fucking great moment.
Yeah.
Man, it's going to be lost in America. And I sat and I cried with them. And we all cried together. And then I couldn't stop. Because I had this great moment. My dad goes, "You need to calm down. You need to calm down. Pull it together." And I go, but.
Now you're crying about a second thing.
But I go, "Dad." And he goes, "What?" He goes, "What is making you so sad?" And then I couldn't get him to connect with what I was so upset about. I said, "She's not. She doesn't look like her. She's not so happy." And he goes, "What?" I go, "She's not smiling." He goes, "Are you fucking retarded?" He goes, "Do you want her smiling in that box?" Just like this, like, "Hey." And we all started laughing and we stopped crying and we had to enjoy the rest of the funeral.
That is so sweet. Sometimes it's just you have to kind of get it out.
Yeah. I cry a lot now. I've cried twice during the taping of Bert the Conqueror. I cried once on a drop ride because I had a contused nut the day before and I had seen death in the hospital. And then I did this thing and it made me.
Wait, you had a concussion?
I was at a ride, a park in New Jersey. Is anyone from Jersey? Do you know what Action Park is? Action Park, they used to call it Traction Park. It was a lot of injuries, like 6 deaths.
Oh, my God.
I fell off a slide. I ruptured my nut, so it blew up the size of, like, a softball. And I had spent the night in the hospital. I watched a woman come in and die alone. I don't know if she died, but she was dying. There were things all over her face. She was sad. I watched her cry in a wheelchair, just sitting there crying by herself, and it really affected me. The next day, I do this ride called Zumanjaro. It's a 415-foot free fall. You free fall for, like, 7 fucking seconds.
That's crazy.
And it's so long that you think it's broken.
Yeah.
And that's how long it is. And I do the drop, and I'm a little shot and gun-shy from yesterday and watching this woman go through this. I do the drop, and as it rests at the bottom, I just start crying. And I can't stop crying. And I go, I don't know why I'm crying. Because all these – it was like a salad bowl of emotion. And I said, I got to try it again. I did it again, and I fell again, and I started crying again. And everyone's laughing at me, but I don't care. The second time I cried probably 3 times on this. Second time I cried, I just watched the cut of that. We did the Rugged Maniac. And I will say this right now to anyone who's thinking about doing any of these these extreme races. The Rugged Maniac is beautiful in what it provides, and it provides an opportunity for you to get away, get out of your hand, get off your computer, stop publicly shaming people or judging anybody.
Right.
And allows you to see people who, for who they are. Their last event is the warped wall. It's like a half pipe where you have to run up, jump up 12 feet, grab on and pull yourself up. And I will say this, there are overweight women trying. And it affected me so much.
And you miss and then you just fall flat down.
But how often are people ashamed of their body, let alone to put themselves out there and go, let me try to get this wall. And there are great in-shape people all around.
Yeah.
And you're failing in front of them. And they're doing it. But then there are in-shape people helping the overweight people up. And I can only say women. I was a man and I did it. And I'm overweight. I'm very overweight. And I got over it.
You're not that overweight.
I was 255 when I did it.
That's
240,
overweight.
I'm 240 right now.
Good. Good for you, man. You look good.
Thanks. And so I got up over it, and it was emotional for me. But then to watch women, who we know how society treats them, we know how people think about when a woman's overweight, to watch them put themselves out there like that, and then to watch people help them. Mm-hmm. And this sense of community is so lost in America, and I fucking fell apart after the race.
Bert,
you guys gonna get me to cry
so
again.
Sweet.
I started bawling,
so
my cameraman started bawling, and I was like, this is what America needs, is these moments where you start seeing people as people and not just some fucking profile picture.
See, there you go.
Yeah.
This is good. You're bringing the light, man. Somebody's got to keep the faith. This is good.
I got faith.
That's great, man. Yeah. That's great. Thank you so much
for
coming.
Thank you for having
me. I really
can't
thank you enough. You're just
this
a wonderful storyteller, and it's just, you're a perfect fit for our show.
Oh,
so this is amazing.
Thank you. I love it. You guys get a good thing. Thank you very much.
All right, you guys. I want to thank everybody here at Sideshow Network, including Andrew Steven, Sean Merrick, and Roddy Swearingen, and of course Maria Spertolozzi over there.
Mm-hmm.
Maria handles pictures every week. Did you know that, Hannes?
Handles pictures?
She's a picture handler.
She handles photographs?
That's exactly right.
She just picks up random photographs off the street.
Pretty much. Yep. I'd also like to thank our new sound guy, Ben Stewart. Wow, Ben. Nice. Thank you for keeping
He's
us on time.
He's rocking the plaid.
If you can hear us, Ben is
Young
doing
hipster.
His job.
Good job, Ben. Oh, sorry.
Ben, you're fired.
And of course, on behalf of John Thomas Griffith, you know, he wrote the theme song, Follow Me.
That guy stole something out of my train car once. I'll never talk to him.
And of course, on behalf of you, Bert Kreischer, thank you so much.
Thank you.
She's an amazing storyteller. And on behalf of you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Blackburn. Make it the story. The light force of the rear that you can.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.